Okay, let's jump right in. If you think osteoporosis is, just something that happens to very elderly people, maybe in nursing homes, well, we need to completely rethink that.
Yeah, that's probably one of the biggest and maybe most dangerous myths out there about bone health today.
Right, because the reality, based on all the material we've looked at, is that serious bone loss doesn't just sort of appear out of nowhere in old age.
Not at all. It often starts silently. You hardly notice it back in your 20s and 30s. It builds up over decades, long, long before someone might actually break a bone.
So it's not like flipping a switch.
Exactly. It's a cumulative process. And the real causes aren't just birthdays piling up. It's more about, as our sources point out, these decades of maybe subtle nutritional gaps, significant hormonal shifts that happen during life, and importantly, specific lifestyle choices that can actively work against keeping your skeleton strong.
Understanding that long lead-up time seems absolutely key for getting why prevention matters so much so early.
It really is.
And that's exactly what we want to do in this deep dive.
Yeah.
We've gone through the sources you provided on osteoporosis, and we're aiming to pull out the most crucial, actionable information.
Okay.
Like, what really is osteoporosis? What are the root causes, according to this research? And maybe most importantly, why is prevention something you can't just put off until later life, but something to consider, well, now?
Let's start with the word itself, osteoporosis. It literally means porous bones from the Greek.
Porous bones. What was that?
Yeah. If you were to look at healthy bone under a microscope, you'd see this dense, kind of intricate web, a really solid structure,
Right. Strong.
strong with minimal gaps. But in osteoporosis, that structure starts to degrade. The bone mineral density drops, the overall mass decreases, and you're left with something much more fragile, open, almost like a sponge where it should be solid.
And the result of that loss of density, that sponginess.
Fragility. The bones just become really weak, highly susceptible to breaking.
And we're not necessarily talking about breaks from like a major accident.
No, exactly. We're talking about fragility fractures, breaks from really minimal stress, like a simple fall from standing height or bumping into something. In really severe cases, even just bending over or, a strong cough could cause a vertebra in the spine to fracture.
Wow.
And the sources are really clear. This isn't just normal aging. Sure, some bone loss happens as we get older. That's natural. But osteoporosis is what they call a pathological acceleration of that process. It goes way beyond the normal rate.
So it's like the system's out of balance.
Precisely. Think about bone renewal. It's constant. In a healthy state, the rate old bone gets broken down is pretty much matched by the rate new bone is built. With osteoporosis, that balance is way off. Bone resorption, that's the breaking down part, starts happening much faster than bone formation, the building part.
And that imbalance happening year after year, that leads to the weakness.
That's what causes the fragility. Yes.
Okay, let's unpack that dynamic process a bit more, because this idea that bones are constantly changing is, well, it's fascinating and maybe not what people assume.
Right. They're not just inert, like pipes or something. They are incredibly dynamic, living tissues, always changing, adapting, renewing themselves. The whole thing is called bone remodeling.
Bone remodeling,
Yeah,
okay.
think of your skeleton like a building under constant renovation. You've got these specialized demolition cells. They're called osteoclasts.
Osteoclasts, got
Their
it.
job is to find old, damaged, or stressed bits of bone, break them down, resorb the minerals, and clear the area.
So the cleanup crew?
Kinda, yeah. And then right behind them comes the construction crew, the osteoblasts.
Osteoblasts, builders.
Exactly. Once the osteoclasts are done, the osteoblasts move in. They lay down this new bone framework, mostly collagen, and then they mineralize it, adding the calcium and other minerals, building new, strong bone.
And this cycle of breaking down and building up happens all the time.
All the time, all over your skeleton, throughout your entire life. And this is what the sources really stress, is remodeling isn't just happening in a vacuum. It's hugely influenced by outside factors, what you eat, your hormone levels throughout life, and really critically, the physical forces you put on your skeleton through activity. These are the big levers controlling that balance.
Which brings us to, I think, a really vital concept, peak bone mass.
Absolutely critical.
The idea that the strength your bones reach early in adulthood is maybe the biggest factor in how strong they are later on. like building a savings account for your skeleton.
That's a great analogy. The research shows peak bone mass is usually hit fairly early, typically between 25 and 30 years old.
So quite young, really.
Yeah, that's when your bones are generally at their biggest, densest, strongest. Building as much bone as possible during childhood, teenage years, and early adulthood gives you a much bigger reserve to draw from later when some bone loss is kind of inevitable.
Okay, so what happens after you hit that peak, say, around 30?
Well, according to the sources, that's when the natural balance of remodeling starts to subtly shift. The demolition crew, the osteoclasts, they begin to work just a tiny bit faster than the builders, the osteoblasts.
So a very slow, gradual decline starts.
For many people, yes, it's very slow for a number of years. But this process can speed up dramatically in certain situations, most notably for women during and after menopause.
Right, the hormonal link.
Exactly. The sources really highlight the huge impact of that big drop in estrogen. Estrogen is really protective for bones. It helps keep those osteoclasts in check and supports the osteoblasts.
So it slows down the breakdown and helps the building.
Pretty much. When estrogen levels fall sharply, that protection weakens, and you see a much faster rate of bone loss in those first few years after menopause.
Okay. So understanding that background, let's really dive into the building blocks themselves, the nutrients. The sources make it super clear. Strong bones aren't just about one thing.
No, definitely not. It's a team effort. Multiple nutrients have to work together synergistically.
Calcium, obviously, is the one everyone knows, and for good reason, right? Like 99% of the body's calcium is in our bones.
Absolutely. It's the main mineral, gives bones their rigidity. Your skeleton is basically the body's calcium bank.
But, and this seems like a really important but, it can't do the job alone.
That's the critical point, often missed. Calcium needs several cofactors to be absorbed properly from your food or supplements, and then, crucially, to be directed and integrated into the bone tissue itself.
Like you need the bricks, but also the mortar and the workers.
Exactly. You need the whole system. And even with calcium itself, the form you take matters.
Okay. Tell us about that.
Well, the material we looked at mentions calcium citrate as being particularly well absorbed, especially compared to calcium carbonate.
Citrate versus carbonate. Why is citrate better absorbed?
It seems to be less dependent on stomach acid for absorption. This is helpful because stomach acid levels can decrease as we age or if someone's taking acid-reducing meds.
Okay.
Plus, you can take calcium citrate with or without food, which is convenient. Calcium carbonate needs stomach acid, so it's best taken with a meal. It does have more elemental calcium per pill, but absorption might be lower for some people.
And what about how much to take at once?
That's another key practical tip from the sources. Don't take huge doses all at once. Aim for no more than maybe 500 to 600 milligrams of calcium at a single time.
Why is that?
Your body can only absorb so much calcium in one go. Taking more doesn't mean you absorb more. The excess might just pass through or potentially cause issues elsewhere. Spreading it out through the day is much more effective.
Whether from food or supplements.
Yes. And speaking of food, while supplements have their place, getting calcium from your diet is foundational.
There are some good food sources mentioned.
Leafy greens are highlighted, like kale, bok choy, broccoli, and importantly, the calcium in these is often quite bioavailable, meaning your body can actually use it well.
Interesting. Better than spinach, I hear. Because of oxalates.
That's often mentioned, yes. Oxalates in spinach can bind calcium. But kale, bok choy, broccoli are great. Also things like bone broth, sesame seeds, almonds, and tofu made with calcium sulfate.
Good list. Okay, so calcium is key, but needs helpers. Let's talk cofactors. Magnesium.
Absolutely essential. Maybe the most overlooked mineral partner for calcium. Its roles are vital.
How does it help?
Well, first, magnesium is needed to convert vitamin D into its active form in the body. Without active vitamin D, you don't absorb calcium well.
Ah, okay. So magnesium unlocks vitamin D's potential.
In a way, yes. Plus, magnesium directly helps regulate how calcium moves in and out of cells, making sure it gets into bone cells and the bone matrix where it belongs.
And like calcium, does the form of magnesium supplement matter?
It does. The sources often recommend forms like magnesium glycinate or citrate. They tend to be better absorbed and gentler in the stomach than, say, magnesium oxide.
Magnesium oxide often has that laxative effect, right?
It can, yeah, because it's not as well absorbed, so the unabsorbed part draws water into the bowel. Glycinate and citrate are usually better choices if you're trying to boost your levels. And again, food sources are key dark leafy greens, nuts, seeds, whole grains.
Okay, next crucial player, vitamin D3.
It's non-negotiable. Sunshine helps our bodies make it, but many people need dietary sources or supplements especially depending on location and lifestyle.
And its main job for bones.
Calcium absorption. It dramatically increases how much calcium you absorb from your food and supplements in your gut. Without enough vitamin D, you could be taking plenty of calcium, but just not absorbing it properly.
And there was a tip about taking vitamin D supplements.
Yes. Take it with fat. It's a fat-soluble vitamin, so taking it with a meal that contains some fat, ideally your largest meal, helps your body absorb it much better.
Good tip. Food sources.
Fatty fish are great. Salmon, mackerel, sardines, bonus. They also give you those healthy omega-3 fats, which might also be good for bones.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Now, there's another vitamin that's getting more attention lately, vitamin K2.
Yes, vitamin K2, and specifically the MK7 form. This one's really interesting. Think of vitamin D as getting the calcium into your bloodstream.
Okay.
Vitamin K2, especially MK7, acts like the traffic cop. It directs that calcium where it needs to go.
So it tells the calcium, go to the bones, not somewhere else.
Exactly. It's crucial for activating certain proteins. One is osteocalcin, which is in bone. Activated osteocalcin helps bind calcium into the bone matrix.
Okay, locks it into the bone.
Right. And another protein K2 activates is matrix GLAV protein, or MGP, which is found in soft tissues, like artery walls. Activated MGP helps prevent calcium from depositing in those soft tissues.
Ah, so it keeps calcium out of arteries where it could cause calcification.
Precisely. So K2 isn't just about bone strength. It's also important for cardiovascular health by keeping calcium where it belongs in bones and teeth and out of arteries and other soft tissues.
That's a really important dual role.
It is. That's why the sources strongly suggest taking K2 along with vitamin D3. They work as a team, ideally with food.
And you mentioned the MK7 form.
Yes, MK7 is generally preferred over the MK4 form in supplements because it stays active in the body for much longer, giving more consistent benefits.
What about food sources for K2?
Fermented foods are the best bet. Natto, that Japanese fermented soybean dish, is incredibly rich in MK7. Some cheeses and egg yolks also contain K2, but often in smaller amounts or the MK4 form.
Natto might be an acquired taste for some.
It might be, which is why supplements are a common route for K2, MK7.
Okay, beyond calcium, magnesium, D3, K2, any other supporting minerals mentioned?
Yes, the sources briefly mention others like boron, zinc, and silicon. They're needed in smaller amounts, but play supporting roles.
What do they do?
They seem to help with collagen synthesis and the overall formation of the bone matrix. Remember, bone isn't just minerals. It has that protein framework, mostly collagen, that gives it structure and some flexibility. These minerals help build and maintain that organic part.
So it really underscores that a varied whole foods diet is important for getting all these trace elements too.
Absolutely. Focusing only on the big players misses the bigger picture of bone nutrition.
Now, switching gears slightly, but critically important, the sources highlight that bone loss isn't just about diet or aging or hormones. Certain underlying medical conditions can really accelerate it.
This is a huge point. For some people, managing bone health effectively means first identifying and addressing these other conditions.
Let's go through some mentioned in the sources. First, hyperthyroidism, overactive thyroid.
Right. Too much thyroid hormone speeds up the whole metabolic rate, including bone remodeling. The osteoclasts start breaking down bone much faster than the osteoblasts can keep up, leading to pretty rapid bone loss if it's not controlled.
Okay. Chronic kidney disease.
Kidneys are vital for balancing minerals like calcium and phosphorus, and also for activating vitamin D. When kidneys aren't working well, these processes get disrupted, leading to bone problems, sometimes called renal osteodystrophy.
What about gut issues like celiac disease?
Big impact. Celiac disease damages the lining of the small intestine. That's where you absorb most nutrients. So if the gut lining is damaged, you can't properly absorb calcium, magnesium, vitamin D, vitamin K, all the essential bone nutrients, even if you're eating them. Malabsorption is a major driver of bone loss in these conditions.
Medications came up too. Corticosteroids.
Yes. Long-term use of steroids like prednisone is a very well-known cause of significant bone loss. They hit bone health from multiple angles. They suppress the bone-building osteoblasts and boost the activity of the bone-resorbing osteoclasts, the double whammy.
Rheumatoid arthritis was also listed.
Yeah, the chronic inflammation itself in RA seems to promote bone loss systemically. Plus, inflammation around the joints can directly erode bone locally. And unfortunately, corticosteroids are often used to treat RA, adding to the risk.
And premature menopause, happening before age 40 or 45.
Significant risk factor. It means that protective effect of estrogen is lost much earlier, giving bone loss more time to accumulate over a woman's lifespan compared to menopause at the average age.
Finally, conditions involving very low body weight, like low BMI or eating disorders.
Yes, extremely detrimental. Very low body fat often leads to hormonal disruption, including low estrogen. And critically, eating disorders usually involve severe nutritional deficiencies across the board, starving the bones of everything they need.
So the clear takeaway is, if you have any of these conditions, bone health needs to be on your radar, actively discussed with your doctor.
Absolutely. You need monitoring and specific strategies to protect your bones in those situations.
Beyond medical issues, the sources really hammer home the impact of everyday lifestyle choices. It's not just about adding good things, but also avoiding things that harm bone.
Definitely. Some common habits are clearly bad news for bones. Smoking is a big one.
How does smoking affect bones?
It seems to directly harm the osteoblasts, the bone builders. It can also impair blood flow to bones and interfere with calcium absorption and hormone balance. Strong links to lower bone density and higher fracture risk.
What about alcohol?
Excessive alcohol intake is also detrimental. It can mess with the osteoblasts, reduce nutrient absorption, calcium, vitamin D, disrupt hormones, and importantly, it increases the risk of falls, which is obviously dangerous if bones are already fragile.
And then there's being sedentary, lack of activity.
Profoundly damaging.
Yeah.
And this is where we hit another major myth the sources tackle head on. Just taking calcium supplements isn't enough, even with enough D and K2.
Right. You could have perfect nutrient levels, but if you don't use your bones,
they won't get stronger. It's all about mechanical loading. Bones are like muscles. They adapt to stress.
How does that work?
When you do activities that put force on your bones, impact, resistance, it creates tiny signals within the bone tissue. These signals basically tell the osteoblasts, hey, we need to be stronger here to handle this load.
So loading signals the builders to get to work.
Exactly. That's why resistance exercise and weight-bearing activities are absolutely critical. Things like lifting weights, using resistance bands, body weight exercises like squats and push-ups.
And weight-bearing means activities against gravity.
Yes. Walking, running, jumping, dancing, hiking. Without this loading stimulus, the signal for bone formation just isn't there. Bones will weaken over time, no matter how much calcium you take, because the body doesn't perceive a need for them to be strong.
So while cardio is great for the heart, it might not be enough for bones unless it's high impact.
Generally, yes. You need that specific loading stimulus.
The sources also mentioned caffeine and sugar.
Yeah, they caution against excessive amounts. The idea is they might potentially increase calcium loss from the body or interfere with absorption. But the main focus for prevention remains getting enough key nutrients and, crucially, that resistance exercise. Moderation with caffeine and sugar is probably wise.
Okay. And a really vital point that often gets overlooked. This isn't just a women's issue.
It needs to be shouted from the rooftops. Osteoporosis absolutely affects men, too.
It's a major blind spot. What were the stats?
The sources cited indicate men account for nearly 20-25% of osteoporosis-related fractures. That's roughly 1 in 4 or 5 fractures happening in men.
1 in 4 or 5. That's significant.
It is. And concerningly, when men do have a major fracture, like a hip fracture, their outcomes are often worse than women's higher rates of complications, disability, and even mortality.
Wow. So this really underscores that bone health is everyone's concern.
Absolutely. Men need to be just as aware of nutrition, the need for resistance exercise, and their own risk factors, like underlying conditions or lifestyle choices. It's human health, period.
And thinking about prevention and management, maybe the most profound insight from the sources was the push for personalized prevention.
Yes, moving beyond the generic advice. The old one-size-fits-all approach just doesn't cut it because we're all so different.
How so?
Well, think about it. Someone with celiac disease has completely different absorption challenges than someone with a healthy gut. Individual nutrient needs vary based on genetics, diet, activity level, overall health.
So just telling everyone, take calcium and vitamin D isn't enough.
It's often insufficient. A tailored strategy is much better. That might involve, for some people, periodic lab tests to check levels of vitamin D, maybe magnesium or calcium.
And looking closely at individual habits.
Definitely. What does someone actually eat? What's their real exercise routine? Do they have any of those underlying conditions we talked about? What medications are they on? What's their family history like? All these pieces need to be considered.
And bone density scans. DXA scans.
Yeah, DXA scans are particularly important for people with known risk factors. Early menopause, family history, certain medical conditions, long-term steroid use. A DEXA measures bone mineral density, usually at the hip and spine.
And it gives you a score.
It gives you a T score, which compares your density to that of a healthy young adult. It can identify low bone density called osteopenia or full-blown osteoporosis, ideally before a fracture happens, so you can take action.
So the call is really for a much more individualized approach based on risk factors and personal situation.
Exactly. Moving away from broad strokes to a more tailored plan.
Finally, the sources urged looking beyond just the fracture risk itself to the impact on quality of life.
Yes, because it's not just about avoiding a break. The consequences can be huge. A fracture, especially hip or spine, can really steal someone's independence and mobility.
The example given was a hip fracture in old age.
A powerful one. It's often the event that marks a major decline. It can mean the difference between living independently at home, walking, doing daily activities, versus needing long-term care, facing permanent disability, reduced mobility, and just a general decline in health.
It really highlights the high stakes involved in prevention. It's about maintaining vitality and independence long-term.
Absolutely. Proactive bone health is a critical piece of healthy aging.
Okay, so let's try and quickly summarize the absolute key takeaways for you, the listener, from all this material.
First, remember, bone loss starts early. Focus on building that peak bone mass in your younger years, 20s, 30s, with weight-bearing and resistance exercise, plus a nutrient-dense diet.
Second, think beyond just calcium. You need the team: magnesium, vitamin D3, and vitamin K2, MK7. If you supplement, choose forms that are well-absorbed, calcium citrate, magnesium glycinate, or citrate. Pair D3 with K2, take fat-soluble vitamins with fat, and split your calcium doses.
Third, watch out for lifestyle factors that harm bones. Limit or avoid smoking, excessive alcohol, and critically, make sure you're doing resistance and weight-bearing exercise. That mechanical loading is essential. Go easy on the caffeine and sugar.
And fourth, remember, individual factors and underlying conditions matter. If you have risk factors, medical conditions, family history, certain meds talk specifically to your doctor about bone health. Consider personalized strategies, maybe including tests or scans.
Whether you're just learning about this, maybe you're a clinician, or you're just focused on your own health journey, understanding this dynamic nature of bone cells, the nutrients, the hormones, the absolute need for physical loading starting early, it really shifts bone health from being some abstract future worry to an actionable priority right now.
Yeah, it's foundational knowledge that lets you make choices today for a stronger skeleton decades down the line.
And that's why we do these deep dives. Now, next time, we're going to shift focus slightly, but stick with the theme of hormonal changes and aging. We'll be digging into the science behind hot flashes and menopause.
Oh, interesting. What aspects will we cover?
We'll look at what the research says really causes them, explore proactive lifestyle and nutritional approaches that might help with prevention or management starting early, again, and discuss how those major hormone shifts during menopause affect way more than just mood or body temperature. They have far-reaching effects on overall health.
Sounds like another important deep dive. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss it. You can find us on YouTube and wherever you get your deep dives.